In Dublin this week to address policymakers, technocrats and everyday folk is Stephen Walter from the Engagement Lab at Emerson College in Boston, Massachusetts. Walter leads a team researching and developing games designed to enhance civic life, games that attempt to lure those everyday folks into steering how their world is planned and run. The idea is to create something that works a little bit like the old democratic system, but powered by playful interaction and presumably populated by citizens who maintain a degree of optimism about the future. So, how can games help design a new world?
The most basic fundamental level, a game taps into something that is a natural sort of attention-focusing device that people have, which is play. So young children from the earliest age that they have consciousness use play as the primary mode in which they learn about the world. It's the thing that engages them to it. The world has a constant sense of novelty, and they're constantly attending to new things. As we age and become adults, the world loses its novelty, and we're not always learning and playing with the world and experimenting with it and reflecting on it in new ways. And so a game is sort of a way to facilitate bringing play into real-world serious practices. And through that, people can learn, play, and reflect upon the world in more interesting, nuanced ways. And practically, games are wonderful devices at creating what John Dewey calls social control, which is essentially ground-up, rule-based governance. So instead of being told what to do, if you're playing a game with a bunch of people, there's a sense of common authorship over the rules and more of a sense of ownership over the process. And then games help people understand complex systems more. Games can make people view the world in slightly different ways. So the Red Cross has this concept of pervasive games that they try out a lot, very similar to a LARP. And that's essentially using a game to help people learn more about things that are happening in the real world, things related to climate change in particular. And with this game constantly going on in the back of their heads, they may see a particular thing in a city that that is notable for its impact on climate change, and sort of will like seek out and learn more about that in that context. I would say games represent a convergence of citizen power with an autotelic experience, or meaning an experience that's enjoyable in and of itself. So if we were to think of a graph, and the vertical axis goes from something that is you really have no role in, it's non-participation, someone's telling you something and that's it, you're not participating. And then at the top of the axis, it's power, you actually have some say in what's going to happen in some kind of civic or social process. And if the horizontal axis went from work or something that was obligatory, something you were forced to do, and the other end was something that was autotelic or something that was, let's say, play. Games represent the sort of the upper right quadrant of that, and they represent an experience that in and of itself is enjoyable and meaningful, but can be utilized if done right to create real world action and change. You know, there are many approaches that people are already taking in terms of making civic engagement more fun, and that's great, and those shouldn't go away, such as a block party. And there are many games out there that help people learn about things in a fun way, but it ends there. It's siloed off, and at best, the people who are making this game or making this block party may have some call to action to get people to do something outside of the game, but oftentimes it doesn't happen. An engagement game, and what we do at the Engagement Game Lab, is about creating games and processes that actually in and of themselves are facilitating actively real-world action. So as you take action within the game, you're taking action within the real world. Whenever we make a game, it's also about using that game to learn more about how democratic processes work in different places and how we can make it better through games.
You talk particularly about this game called Community Planet.
It's a time-limited, mission-based game. It usually takes place over 3 weeks, so it's an event. And players sign up. They play as themselves, but there's a sort of a small narrative going on in the game world where they're facing off against these villainous crats, which is short for technocrat, which are these technocratic, bureaucratic people who don't think you know what you're talking about. For the majority of the game, you're playing as yourself, and you play through challenges that ask you to give your input about something or put a point in a map about an area you don't feel safe, or upload a picture of something you feel beautiful, or give a story of how you came to the area. And then one of the questions we have is called an empathy question. And that is when we ask a question, but you have to answer it from the perspective of somebody else from that community, somebody who's different from you.
It's quite literary in bent then, rather than, say, graphic as an alternative.
That's right. And that's one of the conscious choices we made to make the platform as accessible as possible. We didn't want to make a 3D immersive digital game, one, because it would isolate non-game players, but also the technology required to play it would be intense. So instead, we created a mostly text-based game with good graphics, but it's available to play on any internet browser running JavaScript.
And you've used this community planet in several locations and got very interesting results.
That's right. So, for instance, we can look at the city of Detroit, where the results of the game fit into the city's 50-year master planning process that produced a 300-page document that got hundreds of million dollars in funding after, and that the federal government is now using to plan for Detroit's future over the next 50 years, and the data from the game was heavily involved in creating that plan. A much smaller scale result was one of our games that we did at a high school in Los Angeles. And the game was about social media policy and the internet in school and how it could how it affects students' relationship to learning and all sorts of things like that. And one of the most direct results of that game was a radical new discussion about the use of social media in school between administrators and kids. And that's something that resulted in an immediate policy change just because the dialogue and the conversation itself had never happened.
It seems that you're creating games to deal with an issue that some people put down to the fact that people do interface using screens all the time. So I'd be interested, what were the debates within your group about screen-based gaming rather than some other type of gaming? Because it seems like you are almost part of the problem as you try to solve it.
Right. One thing that we take very seriously, and something that has been a part of any of the successes we've had with our games, is when the game is either itself a multimodal game or is part of a multimodal process. So while a screen is a very easy way to reach a large amount of people, from whether it's a smartphone screen or a computer screen, it's only one way. And we like to combine with these screen-based games offline elements of alternate reality games, or face-to-face meetings, board games. We do a lot of board games, a lot of role-playing games, as a way to sort of scaffold the game into different areas of life, not just the screen.
Stephen Walter from the Engagement Lab in Emerson College in Boston there. And you can find out more about the lab's work at engagementlab.org.